Hi, and welcome to GamerCast, episode 164. I'm Adam.
And I'm Paul, and this is the episode for the 26th of July 2009.
And this is our first episode on Skype.
So you'll have to bear with us as we act strange.
Yes, it's a little bit weird with the fact that got a delay and we're trying not to interrupt each other.
Yeah, you're lag, dude. Get a faster internet.
Actually, I don't even know if Sarah's actually downloading anything.
Well, make sure she's not.
Yeah. GamerCast on Skype. If you've missed a couple of episodes, Paul has relocated himself. Where are you now?
Aldershot.
I always think of it, it's outside of London. Very outside of London.
We are outside of London.
Luckily. So we're now having to do shows like this. I must admit, we've come a long way from the beginning. Originally, it was me having to get a lift by my mum because I didn't have a car. Then I had a car and I had to drive 5 miles to your house to record the show. Then I happened to start dating a girl that happened to live at the bottom of your road and moved in with her. So I walked up every Sunday, which was quite easier. And now we're having to do it the internet way over Skype.
Yeah. All right, so let's kick off. First of all, we've got Halo Legends. Let's talk a bit about that, shall we?
Yep. Announced at Comic-Con 2009, I believe it was Halo Legends, which is an anime that is being produced on the same lines as Gotham Knights and the Animatrix, which is a set of stories which will follow, from the looks of it, the Master Chief plus their characters. It's going to be a series of 7 cartoons.
Woo.
Looks like they're probably going to be more shown about it or information about it, or they might be released one at a time on Xbox Live and digital download, but will be eventually available on Blu-ray and DVD later on. It's due for release in 2009, but won't be out on DVD and Blu-ray until 2010. Trailer is available. It does look very cool. It's all done in different styles, so each one, like Gotham Knight and the Animatrix, it's different styles for each story. So from the looks of it, there's a very cool CG Master Chief, and then there's some traditional drawing anime, but they're all drawn in different styles and stuff like that. So yeah, it does look quite cool having these little short stories. So it's nice to have that sort of thing now that we're picking back up into Halo mode again, ready for ODST to be out.
Yeah, they need to sell Sonic to make some money, don't they?
Yeah, I was watching an interview with Peter Jackson, with him saying about the disappointment of not being able to do the Halo movie, and only getting as far as that little short story that he did. Well, it wasn't really a short story, but the stuff that they did, that thing that was released for the beginning of Halo 3 coming out. And he said that he would love to do it, but it's too much. And the interview went on with the guy who was going to direct it, and he said he was very disappointed, but unfortunately he is willing, Microsoft and Bungie are willing, but it was too much of cinema politics in the middle. So that's what caused a lot of the hassle, which was a shame. I think it would have been a good movie. But
The trouble with any film like that is they're bound to screw it up.
Yeah, and I must admit, having this short story anime, I think it's the sort of thing where when these things are done, it's done for the fans, it's done by people who like it, it's not done for making box office millions, it is just done for that reason. And because of that, you're more likely to get a better product out of it. I must admit, from the clips I've seen so far, where they're showing clips from each one of the cartoons, it does look really good, and I'm very, very impressed with the look of it. So check that out. You can find it on most places. I wouldn't be surprised that you could probably find it on YouTube by now.
Dude, yeah, no. Are you encouraging people to wear as films? Yeah.
Yes, I am. Use YouTube. It's great for everything. And
what, and it's annoying 10-minute really little slow. Crappy quality clips?
Yes, it is. Halo Legends Comic-Con 2009 debut trailer. So yeah, check that out. Looks really good. So yeah. What do you want to talk about next? This is really hard because we can't point at anything to say what we're talking about next.
Yeah, well, let's move on to your World of Warcraft mobile application, shall we?
Yeah, a lot of people, especially like someone I know at work, was saying that, you know, he's annoyed that Blizzard has not pushed for a mobile authenticator for other mobile devices when it is only out for the iPhone and also the iPod Touch. But now they've announced that they've released one. It is available on following brands of Sanyo, Sony Ericsson, Samsung, Sigma, Pantech, Nokia, Motorola, MDA, LG, some words I can't even pronounce, BlackBerry. There's a whole drop-down list. When you actually go to the mobile section, it's blizzardmobile.com's area, and there's a little drop-down that says which ones you want. So let's pick Nokia. Then you go down and it's got 2610, 3120. The list for Nokia is absolutely massive. I don't know what phone yours would come under, Paul. What would yours be?
I could put it under, say, an MDA Compact 3 or any Windows Mobile app phone.
Yeah. So if I click MDA, it's got Compact 3.
Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah, so that would probably work. So that means you could easily enough get it for yours. So it's a step in the right direction of saying, you know, we are not just lovers of iPhones. We're going to produce this out for everyone. The only thing that is really going to annoy people is that here it's got BattleNet Mobile Authenticator, cost 50p.
Yeah, piss off.
So, unfortunately,
paying
it'll cost
50 pence.
Yeah. So it is literally £4 plus quite a lot of postage and packaging for the keyring authenticator. So, you know, if you're like me and you bought one of these, like this, you just use that. I don't have the authenticator. The authenticator on the iPhone is free, but I think because the way the App Store is created, it means that if you don't charge anyone, you don't get charged. So for Blizzard, it means that for getting out to people, absolutely free. So why bother charging people? But I imagine for doing it on this service, there must be some sort of cost for getting it to the people. So they've got to charge a little for the cost. So a little bit of a shame that they couldn't get around that to get it free, like the iPhone one. But yeah, I think that's a good thing. It's going to help with the security.
Check on your closest BitTorrent website.
Yeah. The advantage is, because it's not like the iPhone, you're going to have to install it, which means that you could probably get it from another source. But
well, yeah. Of course, you can install things from another source with other makes of phone.
Yes. Unlike the iPhone, where you would have
locked
to hack
into
it.
The Apple proprietary little system.
Yes, it is.
And then watches it gets bricked on the next update.
I always avoid the next update. I leave it at least a week after the next update. I've had my phone bricked twice now, and I've learned my lesson. So yeah, WoW Mobile Authenticator out there now.
Or you could just use a strong password.
Yes, always advise a strong password. I must admit, I think the reason why I have not gone for it is not, like me, I have an authenticator. This is an authenticator, that is a battle.net mobile authenticator. The difference is, you need a battle.net account, not a WoW account. So you
nah,
have to
mine's
upgrade.
A battle.net account.
Like Paul's got a battle.net account, I don't. no reason to until I either get the iPhone Authenticator or I get StarCraft 2. So unless Blizzard forces me to do it, I won't do it until StarCraft 2 comes out, to be honest. I've got no reason to bother.
Yeah, StarCraft 2. Dude, tell them to hurry up and release it.
I know. That's getting. I'm starting to get itchy feet for it.
Just release the beta. Who cares if it works or not? Just release the damn thing.
Yeah.
You can always patch it later.
That's out. Available. It's advertised on the official website, so you can just go there and pick it up.
Mobile.blizzard.com.
Yeah, you can go straight to the Blizzard bit where it's got all the ringtones and everything else that they have and yada yada yada. But they're advertising it. Excuse me. They're advertising it on the main webpage at the moment. Good push in security. Well worth doing it. But like Paul said, strong password as well always helps.
So I've heard you've managed to pick up a copy of Battlefield 1943, even if it was accidentally.
Yep. Actually, there is something else I want to talk about quickly before we go on.
Oh, dude, that's not how my show notes are.
I'm sorry, I'm on the fly. I forgot this off the show notes. Can you see me on the webcam?
Yeah, but there is quite a big delay.
Okay. Like I sent on the email, the WoW Armory, which is cool. So this is another application that's been released, the WoW Armory for the iPhone, which I've been finding incredibly useful.
Wait, did this already exist?
This already exists, but it was created by another company. They basically created one that was for the character list that I showed. Another company did one that was a talent calculator, and another company did one that had all the items that you can pick up in all of the dungeons and raids. This one gives you access to all of your characters already listed because you log in with your account. It also gives you access to your entire guild list, so I can look at everybody in my guild. It gives you update access to your calendar, so I can look in the calendar and accept to any raids or dungeons or anything that wants to happen in my guild. I can do the talent calculator, so I can see what talents I've already got, but at the same time, I can also use the talent calculator and work stuff out. I can also look at items, do searches for stuff, do searches for people.
Wait, so basically, what you're saying is, it's the WoW Armory.
But on the iPhone. So yeah, pretty cool. And the good thing about it is...
Right, so like the Windows Mobile application I've been using since September.
Thing I liked about it was the fact I didn't have to sit there and try and memorize how to type in all my characters' names. I'm trying to think, well, I know there's another one. I've got a warlock. What did I name the warlock? I don't have to think about it. I literally just sign in on my WoW details, and it gives me my list already created because it accesses my... It's a link to the armory and also to your WoW account, which is quite cool. So yeah, I was impressed with that. So now we can talk about Battlefield.
Yeah, talk about Battlefield.
Yep, so Battlefield 1943 downloaded a demo on the PlayStation 3. Had a go on it. It's a limited download. You play several... Well, you don't play several matches. You play one match, or it might have been a couple of matches I was playing. Just keep going backwards and forwards during it, doing all the different rounds. But you can only play it for a set amount of time, and then that is it. So that email account that you've signed up for, you can no longer play unless you pay for it. So I downloaded it on the Xbox, and as I was saying to Paul earlier, I accidentally clicked on the pay for one, not the trial one. So I ended up wasting 800 points, which was saved for Capcom versus Marvel 2. And now I own Battlefield. But I'm glad I did because...
Well, apparently Battlefield's quite good, so...
Yeah, it's up there with Battlefield 2. The feel of it. And I must admit, it's got the same music. As soon as you powered up, I was like, ooh, it's like Battlefield. And I was thinking, this better not be as stinky as Battlefield 2142, because that was just... I love that game, but it was just so badly done.
I love that game, but it sucks.
Yeah, it's just annoying. Why can't the servers work properly? But yeah,
so it's basically Battlefield 1942, only cheap.
Yeah, there seems to be an extra option to be able to do a missions just in the planes, so you can just have a massive battle in the plane because
they've
done really well. Or you can just jump straight into the matches and get shoved into a quick match and
Dude, let me interrupt. Those plane matches would work so much better on a console. Because on the PC, controlling the plane was like almost impossible.
Yeah, where controlling the plane on an Xbox controller is really intuitive. I did have to invert my controls to get it the right way around for me, but yeah, that was quite easy to do. But yeah, because you're not having to go in there and change all the buttons on your keyboard and your gamepad or whatever you're doing, it is just there and it's very intuitive to pick up and play. There is basically the American planes and the Japanese planes, and that's pretty much all you get. The great thing I liked about it was I only on one match did I find that someone was shooting me when I got in my plane and they were on my side because they wanted my plane. And I was like, oh, come on, the machine gun can't really hurt the plane. It's not like playing Battlefield 2 where someone can just shoot me and blow up the helicopter I've just nicked, so they'll wait for it to respawn. But yeah, this good set of vehicles, tanks, jeeps, and then the planes. There's three characters to play as. You've got your long-range infantry, short-range, and sniper. Your sniper also has... he'll have his bayonet, a close-quarters gun, and he has sticks of dynamite, where you've got like the plunger, and you go... Whoop, and it'll blow. You can blow up bridges. There's plenty of bridges where you can blow them up when infantry are coming across or tanks are coming across. The close quarters has got more of a machine gun, and he's got like a rocket launcher for shooting at tanks. And then I can't remember what the long range guy's got, but he's got a rifle, so he's good at shooting people at long distance without having.
Yeah, to, I'd imagine, you know, he'd have some sort of long distance weapon.
Yeah.
Hence,
but yeah,
the name.
But it's really good, and I must admit it's classic, just pick up and play, jump in there, and just start shooting. It has the ability that when you come in, you can either solo or go into a squad. So you can click go in a squad, and it'll dump you in an open slot in a squad, and you can just go together. It has the ability for clicking on to play with friends. So yeah, it feels like a dumbed down, no bells and whistles Battlefield game. But it still feels like a Battlefield game, and I was expecting to be lacking on graphics for it being an Xbox Live game. But the graphics are definitely a lot better than Battlefield 2. They're up there with one of probably Battlefield on the console. So it handles really well, and the great thing about it, because of the environment they're using, they're basically all of the battles are on islands. So it's basically an island chain, and you just do it on each battle's on a different island, which means that you don't have to create a massive environment because it's just an endless sea you get, which also means you're getting these nice little aircraft carriers that have got gun emplacements to shoot aircraft. You've got the aircraft on them, and then you've got the boats, the landing craft, and you get in one of those, you can fit loads of people in it, it drops down into the water, and you get four of those, and you can just sail around the island and just shoot at people from there, and then decide, oh, we're going to go in here, and you'll just land a boat onto the beach, jump out, and storm wherever you need to get to. There's plenty of anti-aircraft gun emplacements, bunkers with machine guns in, plenty of places to snipe. One of them is really good. He's got a lighthouse, which is brilliant for sniping in, but it also means that everyone can see you, and all the snipers will sit in a bush and just shoot the poor idiot who decides to stick his head on the top of the lighthouse and just take it off. But yeah, I must admit, and the great thing about it is, like you always keep saying, Paul, it's about having that game where you don't have to have the disc. And to have a quality game like Battlefield at that level, and yet you don't have to put the disc in the console. You can just power it up, next live game, and it's Battlefield. Oh,
right.
Have you tried the demo?
I haven't, no. Couple of questions, though. What's the maximum number of players?
I don't know what the actual maximum number of players are, but when it brought the list up, there must have been, at least maybe 16 either side.
So 32 players, that's not too bad.
And do you know it's round about that sort of count.
And do you know how big the download is?
No, I don't know how big the download is. I didn't check, but I don't think it's actually that big. Fair enough, I've got the Elite Xbox, so it didn't really affect me. But no, I'll have a look at that for the next show. But it's definitely worth it. It's 800 points. So I don't know what that accordingly comes out to for costing the old sterling
about
pounds.
£6 or £7.
Yeah, I think it's round about that, because I think it's more expensive on PlayStation Network, because it's round about £9 on PlayStation Network, as far as I'm aware. But again, it's an EA game, it's EA servers. I didn't receive any lag. I went on once and it did say something about there was some maintenance going on and I couldn't get on. I tried it the next day and it was fine. I've had no problems. No issues with lag. You have to sign up with an email account, but it also says it'll sign you up automatically if you're not. So you just shove in an email account that's yours and put in a password, hit go. I had a bit of trouble actually getting it to work because it kept bringing up an email account that I used, but it was spelling it wrong and it kept coming back to this one. And I managed to make it stick with one email account, typed in a password, and pow, it worked and I was logged on. But the great thing about it is I only know this for the Xbox version, not for the PlayStation, but once you've logged in your email account and it's all happy with that, from then onwards, every time you power up the game, it never asks you for the password or the email ever again. So it remembers that you're logged in and saves that details on that Xbox.
But
and
the whole EA server thing.
Yes, that was one of the reasons why I went, oh my god, I've just bought Battlefield. This better not be like 2142 again. I don't know exactly how it's working. I imagine that they have to be careful because they're going through Xbox Live. It's a service that people have to pay for, and you can't cheap shot anyone with it. So I think they're doing quite a good job. I've had no issues with it, to be honest. No lag, no problems whatsoever. And now and again, I do lose a bit of connection speed from time to time because I was having a bit of lag when I was playing Halo 3 this week. And I've had no issues with Battlefield. And yeah, I'm liking it just for the fact it's just a pickup, drop into a match, play it through, and once it's finished, I'll jump back out again and do something else. So it feels that sort of game that's really good for an Xbox Live game. And I must admit, it's strange for having something that is, I don't know, high tier style of game. You know, Battlefield 2 is quite a good, very good game at the time. It had a good expansion pack. There's been Xbox versions, other PC releases. So for this game to actually be an arcade version, I'm very impressed with it. It's a good idea, especially for that pick up and play, drop in, have a battle, come back out, and in the entire time you never had to leave the couch with a damn disc in. Yeah, I'm impressed with it. Like I said, graphically, it looks really nice. It's very crisp and clear. It's all, from the looks of it, it's pretty much all daytime maps. There's no major funky features that were in Battlefield 2 like they did with the SAS. It is just simple. You've got grenades, you've got the explosives, you've got two weapons. The cool thing, actually, I know what the ranged infantry, he basically puts a grenade in the end of his gun and it fires the grenade off the end of his gun.
Hang on a minute, like, dude. A grenade ball. That is ridiculous.
It's weird. It looks like a green grenade and it slots on the front of his barrel and he pulls the trigger and he shoots it into something.
Wait, are you sure it's not a bazooka?
No, he put it on the end, because after I pushed a button and then he put a bayonet in and I was kind of going eat with the bayonet.
Wait, are you sure it's not like a Panzerfaust or something?
I don't know. I don't know exactly. You're going to have to go on the demo to see for yourself, but no, I'm impressed with the graphics. It looks good. You can see that they've helped themselves out by not making any silly mistakes with the fact that it's all on an island. The arena for flying in the planes gives you plenty of room. There is that whole, you've gone too far, you need to go back into the battlefield, but you feel like you've got plenty of space, plenty of height. I have found that when you jump out of the plane, you pretty much have just jumped out of a moving plane and you just fall to your death, unless you're pretty low and you can hit the water. Apart from that, if you get out of the plane, you're toast.
Yeah, dude, I'd imagine falling out of a plane is usually pretty fatal.
Yeah, where I remember falling out of the plane in Battlefield, you just activate your parachute, and I don't seem to have found a parachute button, so I don't know if there are any parachutes in it yet. If there are, damn, because I really could use one, but at the moment, not finding a parachute. But bar that, I'm quite impressed. It's quite good. You're flying a lot. You're running along, and you're like, yeah, there's no one here, and all of a sudden you hear a and somebody seen you as they're flying on a flyby, and they literally gun you down, and the tank you were running to gets blown up by two bombs you just dropped on it, and you're like, ah! So, yeah, it's definitely a good game. To be honest, if I'm going to rank this out 5 out of 5, I think I'd have to compare it to an Xbox Live game. As an Xbox Live game, I would definitely put this... I don't know if I could give it 5 out of 5, but if I'm allowed to give it 4.5, I would definitely give it 4.5. Because it is a very top-end Xbox Live game. Compared to... some of the other Battlefields, I would definitely give it high marks for the fact that it's running on EA servers and it's actually running well. It's definitely a chopped down version of its bigger brothers. There's not as many features. The maps are limited. I think I've only come across 3 maps as far as I'm aware, but I've not gone into the create your own match sort of thing where you're the host and everyone comes to you or whatever. I've just done the quick matches, so I need to go into some of the other features and have a bit of a play. But if you like Battlefield and you play the other games, it's definitely one to look at just for the fact that it is an Xbox Live game, and that's the thing to keep in mind. It is not a paid for off the shelf from your video game store disc style game. This is a Xbox Live tier game, or PlayStation Network tier game if you're on that side of the fence. So, yeah, definitely good.
All right, dude, I'll let you talk about it now. You can talk about your Champion Online game.
Yeah, Champions Online has got its release date for, I think it's mid-September. I've had a look at some more of the videos of it.
Fantastic.
It looks like it's going to blow City Heroes out of the water. It looks absolutely amazing. The character creation software is immense of all the details. One thing that they have put in which is absolutely brilliant was the fact that if you've got a character who can fire like energy bolts from his hands, you can sit there and change the hue colors and play around with that and how often the bolts come out. And it's immense of how much you can change and create your character. And the superpowers, you can go in there and start from scratch and build them up as you go through, or you can pick kind of like a story arc that your character is this sort of person. He's got storm powers, he's got fire powers, he's wearing mechanical suits, and it will pick and give you like this a bundle pack of powers that would be equivalent to that style of character, and then you can customize, tweak, and then get in with a costume. And there's lots of extra costume pieces and power sets that aren't actually available until you've unlocked them through the game. But yeah, it's definitely got my attention. I was a bit unsure whether or not it was just going to be not as good as City of Heroes, but it seems to be on par and better. It's got what City of Heroes didn't have, this actually has. So for that aspect, this looks like it might be a game that will either have to run alongside WoW, or I might have to put WoW on pause to play this game.
Dude, don't say that.
But one advantage to this game, which has really got me interested, is the fact that this September it is out on PC. Now, as you know, I run a Mac, so I have quick access to WoW through my Mac, where if I want to be, like, I'm running Dawn of War at the moment, so I have to power up Windows on my Mac to do it.
Why don't you just leave it in Windows, dude? You don't want that Mac OS bollocks.
Oh, I like my Mac OS.
Slow, dated, primitive operating system.
I know, it's dirty, isn't it?
And it looks bad as well. It just looks bad.
I like my Mac OS. But yeah, the advantage, Champions Online will be released later this year or beginning of next year on Xbox 360. So I am tempted to not bother buying this on PC, maybe getting a 10-day trial, 14-day trial if they have one out, see what it's like, and then I might purchase it on the Xbox. So I've got something to play on the Xbox. It seems like that type of game where I'd like to play it on the Xbox.
So why are you so excited about Halo ODST?
Well, I had one of those moments where I wasn't in the mood to play Guitar Hero. I didn't have the time to play Fallout because I'm at this moment where I've got to put a bit of time in to get myself, my character, to a level where I can complete this mission I'm on.
Dude, speaking of Fallout... I've just set, you know, I've had Fallout on the PC.
Yeah.
Well, I've just set it up with a live account, and it won't let me use my old save game, so I'm having to start again.
That's not fair.
No, it's not. I'm annoyed about that. I've just gotten out of the, you know, the vault, so I'm just about to start goofing about outside.
Cool. So yeah, as I was saying, I just kind of looked in the drawer at all my games and I was like, I want to play on my Xbox. I was looking at my PlayStation games and I was like, no, should I play that one? And I just looked at Halo and thought, well, I'm not in the mood to actually play Halo, but I could give the multiplayer another shot and just have a nose about that. So I put it on, started playing that. And before you know it, I spent more time than I was actually intending to on my Xbox, and I was back into playing Halo 3 again. So, yeah, I really got into playing 3 and playing that online at the moment. And I just started looking at all the old videos that I downloaded pre and advance for Halo 3 release, and saw the one for ODST. So I watched that and thought, ODST should be out soon. So I've been looking at videos online for that, and I've just finished watching... the demo video is done for this year's E3 of ODST, and I am incredibly impressed. They basically nerfed the character you play to give it that human feel, where you can't run as fast, you can't jump as high, you can't pick up Covenant weapons, because you are no longer a Spartan super soldier, as it were. You are just a shock trooper. The weaponry for it is pretty cool.
Is it a lot of similar sort of weapons?
They've basically gone back to this. They said that the feel of it, it actually feels a lot like Halo when playing Master Chief there, where you had to pick your battles carefully, you had to work your way through, you didn't feel too super at the time. It's got kind of like a close quarters style machine gun that looks like you should be playing it in Rainbow Six. It's got a really nice pistol. It's got a zoom on it, so it's like the pistol from Halo 1. And this one is really good for doing one-shot headshot kills on enemies that have lost all armor. So when their armor's hit zero, and then you would have to go into their health, you can pretty much headshot them. So you can basically obliterate someone with machine guns, swap to the thing in the head, and they drop down dead.
Dude, that sounds awfully violent for a computer game.
It's Halo.
Wouldn't it be better to simply talk to the Covenant and ask them nicely to leave?
Well, you know how the grunts react. Like, oh my god, he's got a grenade! Run away!
Exactly. There's no reason to kill them. They are our friends.
Yes, the grunts are our friends.
It does look good, doesn't it?
It's a different style of game. It goes into two places. You basically play the rookie ODST out of the squad. You get separated from the rest of your team. You wake up unconscious in the battlefield of what was left after Master Chief left the city from Halo 2. You're walking around in nighttime by yourself. The only help you have is from an AI that is similar to our Cortana, which is the AI that looks after and maintains that city. The AI is partly damaged, but he's basically helping you going through it. It lights up corridors and puts signs up where you're going. It activates telephone booths as you walk past, and you can talk to it, and it gives you hints and like you would with Cortana.
Well, that sounds pretty well done then, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like this intuitive AI that you talk to, and it does seem to have a strong part in the game. And as you're going around trying to find clues, you're having to hunt for these clues of what happened to the rest of the squad that you were supposed to land with. It has backflashes to the daytime of so many hours beforehand of what happened to your teammates, and you get to play as that teammate. So you move along as that teammate, and then it'll come back to playing as the rookie at nighttime. So the story evolves as it goes to like that. They've changed the HUD. You no longer have the radar, so you've got no motion radar.
Nope, human beings do not have radar.
Nope. What you do have is you've got your visor and your helmet, which basically brings up for this terrain definition. It puts lines around all of the terrain and lightens it up, allowing you to see really well in nighttime. But it doesn't really work that well in daytime, so you don't have it turned on then.
It's really fancy night vision, basically.
Yeah, really fancy night vision without ruining the atmosphere of the game with basically making everything look green. You also get like this red hue around your visor when you get damaged, where your stamina gets knocked down. And while it's red, you will lose health. Now, the Master Chief had kind of health packs, would get his health back up, and he had his shields. And then from Halo 2 onwards, he basically, his new armor, he was indestructible, and it wasn't until your shields went down and then they would regenerate, and it was less of the needing for health packs. You just had to duck out the way, come back out again. This, you've gone back to the health packs again, but it's parts of the facilities because, you know, we're in the future, it's a modern technology city, some of the features are still available.
Dude, it's one new Mombasa, of course it's new technology.
Exactly. So there's the health packs that you can pick up from health centers. So you go up to a health center booth and it gives you a health pack and you're healed again. The great thing about it is they wanted to really bring back a lot of the things that were great about Halo. And one of them from the first Halo was the fact of massive expanding environments. Less of the going down corridors and you're limited by where you're moving to.
The first Halo where half the game was copy and pasted the same set of corridors over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, but like the first couple of levels where you actually had that massive expanding environment and you were driving up different areas in the Warthog and stuff like that, they've actually created the whole of the city, and you can go anywhere you want, anytime. You're not railed to a specific location, you can go wherever you want, whenever you want. But because you're an ODST by yourself, you're limited to where you can get to at certain points, because if you bump into a massive squad of Covenant and they're armed to the teeth, you might not be able to take them out all at one go because you're not the Master Chief. So you're having a lot of sneaking, not sneaking about, but making sure you pick your fights. You don't just go running in and obliterate everything. You have to take them out one at a time, move around, be very sneaky, which really gives a nice sense of feel for the game. It gives you that feel of, oh, actually, I'm going to die here. not of this. I'm the Master Chief. I'm going to obliterate all of you with my two handguns. The other thing for the feel is that you cannot dual wield. You have to hold the guns with two hands. And you can't pick up Covenant weaponry. Because obviously it's too big for you. So it gives that slight limitations, but it gives a slight, I think it gives an edge to the feel of the game. Now, for the game itself, it is based in the Halo 3 engine, but it's been tweaked incredibly large amount because they've had another go at using the engine. The other advantage to it is they've split the game up into two discs. So when you purchase... Yeah, this is a cool thing. When you purchase it, you get multiplayer, and then you get Halo ODST. Now, on the Halo ODST, you will get campaign mode, you get Fire Flash, and you get theater and extras. Campaign will obviously be the campaign story mode. Fire Flash, I think that's what it's called, it's Fire something, is basically the multiplayer for ODST, where you go onto these massive big maps, and it is like Horde on Gears of War 2, where you get the floods of infantry coming in, and you've got to stand your ground, and the game changes as it goes through. So you play as the ODST squad. So it's basically all of your mates on Xbox Live against AI-controlled Covenant, and you basically got to defend the base or whatever you're set the mission up to do. So it's more of a cooperative multiplayer, unlike the standard multiplayer you got with Halo 3. Then you've got your theater, which allows you to do your screenshots, video capture, look back at what happened beforehand. Then you've got your extras, where you'll be able to access downloads, videos, and also you'll be able to access, once it's out, the Halo Reach beta. So when Halo Reach comes out for beta, you'll be able to access it from an ODST disc on the extras tab. Then, if you're a person who are not keeping your games and you've completed Halo, you kind of got bored of it and thought, you missed a couple of maps, you traded it in. The second disc is basically Halo 3 multiplayer, which will connect with the Halo 3 multiplayer disc. If someone's got Halo 3 and you've got ODST, it means you'll be able to play the Halo online. Now, that doesn't mean you can play as the ODSTs. It is literally the Halo 3 multiplayer, apart from the two maps that are available on Xbox Live at this moment, which you have to pay for, will be added onto this map. So you'll get those for free with this disc.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it gives you that nice flavor of, you traded in Halo 3. You played it to death. You don't want the story mode anymore. Or you're thinking, actually, I could do with trading in Halo 3. I played it to death, but I should keep it for the multiplayer. But you need to trade something in to get your ODST. Well, now you know, I don't want to keep Halo. I traded in Halo for Halo 2. I traded in Halo 2 when I got Halo 3. You're not the type of person who wants to keep them and replay them. And you're kind of like, well, yes, now I can trade in Halo 3 for Halo 3 ODST. So it gives you that advantage of you're still having the multiplayer and access the multiplayer from everything that was there originally. So, I quite like that. It's a good thing. Fair enough for me, I don't think I'll get rid of my Halo 3 disc because I've got the legendary version. But I do have that extra disc. So if I had a friend who wanted to play Halo 3 with me, I could lend my Halo 3 copy so we could play online for a while. So it's nice that they've gone and done that instead of saying this is ODST but it's got nothing to do with Halo 3. You can't play online with anyone else. If you want to, you're going to have to go buy Halo an old copy of Halo 3. This is just ODST. I like the fact that they said it's everything.
It's obvious they're making it clear that it's more of an expansion pack rather than a complete standalone game.
Yeah, because it's a full loads of hours of gameplay, and it is running from round about the time where Master Chief leaves that city in Halo 2.
Halo 3.
Halo 2. It starts in Halo 2. So, you know when in Halo 2, Master Chief was inside...
Oh, yeah, the bit where they jump away.
Yes. You land round about when that happens, and then it plays on through the city up to a couple of weeks before Halo 3. So it's kind of like a prequel, but it's playing in between the two games, but merging into both of them. So it's like a bit of sticky tape connecting both of these events together. But I think from the feel of it, it's going to be one of those games where you can make it last a little bit longer because it is a sandbox. You have got this massive environment that you are working your way through in, and also the fact that because it is not like a linear, you're going in this direction, you are not limited to the fact of, oh, I can go wherever I want. 3 minutes later, I'm lost. Damn it.
Yeah, that certainly sounds a lot more interesting. But what else is... Carry on, dude.
Sorry, carry on. Yeah, this AI I was talking about, one of the first things he gives you, which is the only thing that Bungie would say in the conversations you'll have with him, is he gives you a map. So you get updated in your database. In your visor, you have like a database you can access all your mission files and stuff for when you're in your squad team for where you... of what your objective is when you drop. And he updates you with a map. So you have this scrolling map you can bring up in your visor to put waypoints to go, oh, there's a point of interest over here. So I'm going to try and make my way here. And then when I've got here, I'm going to make this right. So you drop another waypoint. So it gives you this ability of working your way through. And then all of a sudden you might find that there's a big squad of...
dudes.
Whatever. Yeah. And you can't fight your way past them. There's too many, and you haven't got the weaponry to get past it. So you'll redo your waypoints and go another way to get to this location you're trying to get to. So it's kind of giving you that feel of... you're in Halo games, you're always playing the lone wolf of this mass-heap armored tank destroying the Covenant from everything in front of him. Now you're playing an ODST who's been... he's a rookie. He's a complete noob. He's the low end of the team. He's just joined, and he's been stranded by himself, and he's having to survive off his own wits in this battlefield by himself. So it gives you that sort of feeling of you're the lone wolf again, but from a different perspective, which I do like.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be good. Hopefully it won't be too expensive, though.
I can see them with the fact of how much you get in the package. I can see it being a $39.99
game. Nah, make it $20.
I would love them to make it £20, but I think it's going to be from the sounds of it, it's going to be as full of a game, gameplay-wise, as any of the other Halo games for actually completing it.
Obviously, it's using the same engine, therefore I want it for £20. That's the deal.
That's the thing, it doesn't feel like an expansion pack, it's kind of like... Halo 1 and Halo 2, they weren't the same engine, were they?
No.
No, it's a different engine, same platform. Where this is, it's the same engine, but they've managed to tweak an incredible large amount because they've had time to play with it, and they can actually do more with the engine than they've ever done before.
Well, they've done a lot with it. At least they're experimenting with some of the gameplay things instead of just keeping it as, you know, the Master Chief or some other super warrior who can take down anyone easily. And it's also, it's clear they're also experimenting with things like how they're going to rework the AI, because the AI companion has always been a pretty big element in the Halo games, so getting that right with ODST is pretty important.
Yeah, and I think the other great thing about it is the fact that you can play it cooperative, so you can go through the campaign in cooperative mode, but you can also do the cooperative firefight where you actually are doing the maps. Which is nice because it's that. It was one of the things where you're always having to play with a friend, and if you're playing non-internet, you're not connected to non-internet. You're limited to having to basically be on a map, one versus one, because you're not connected with the rest of the World Wide Web. Like it was when you played Halo 1, unless you had it on PC, you had to play full plan.
And yeah.
Yeah, and we've done at uni, we used to play Halo 4v4 because we had two Xbox 360s and we used to LAN them up. And I think only once did we play more than that because we hooked up three Xboxes.
Yeah, but those times when you did it, it was awesome. You know, nowadays yes, people just say, "Oh, we'll just play it online for a bit," and then you know, it's not as good, is it?
It was just something about having it. We have it completely. James didn't have much in his bedroom, so we managed to nick someone else's desk from their room. We managed to get a couple of desks in, and the TVs facing each other, and it's one team sat on one side of the room, one team sat on the other, and you can see each other. You know, it's none of this headset stuff. You're basically all sat there with a controller. And you're facing off against your opponent who is sat on the other side of the TV from you. So there's something great about LAN matches. And I must admit, the feature is still there. If you wanted to, you could hook up with several Xbox 360s and have a LAN match. They still keep that ability there, but it is always easier to do it the new way, which is over the internet. But the great thing I like about ODST is if you're going to play this, maybe two people, three people, or up to your maximum on four people on one console, this game means that it is all four of you, your teammates, together, team working against the AI. And I do like that. There is something when you've got two people, if you're chasing each other on the map, it can get quite fun. And sometimes it can get annoying because if someone's skill ability is more than yours, it is a one-sided match. It's like he's the fox and you're the hare and you're basically running for your life every 5 seconds. But with ODST, I'm getting the feeling you've got more of this teamwork that when you're playing this game, the guy from Bungie was saying, if you don't work as a team, you're not going to survive. You because you're ODSTs, with the amount of enemies and the way the AI is going to run up that hill at you, or wherever you are, you're going to have to work as a team to defeat them. Which is a nice twist, because you do get a lot of lone wolves in Halo 3, where they'll just work by themselves, and you do get a lot of people who are very up for, they'll all cling together and work as a squad, trying to attack the other team. It's a different way of continuing on with the Halo universe, which I think is absolutely great. So yeah, I'm getting quite excited about it.
And no doubt we'll be reviewing it in September when it's released.
Oh yeah, we definitely will. I think we may have to even, if I can get this DV cam working for the chat channel, I think I'm definitely going to have to set it up so we can maybe have an online bash and a talk through with the game while having the camera at the screen.
Yeah.
Which would be quite cool.
Well, let's finish up with 1 versus 100.
Yeah.
So this was released, I don't know, what was it, a week or two ago?
Yes.
2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, about that. Out on beta.
Yeah, so I played a few nights of it. Basically, it's a Xbox Live Arcade game. It's only for, at the moment, it's in beta, and it's only for Xbox Live Gold subscribers. But basically,
so you don't have to pay for it at
point. Not at the moment, at least. But it will probably be ad supported and free when it's actually released. At the moment, they're just doing it gold because of the beta at the moment. But it's not like your normal quiz game, where you know you can just play it anytime you want, in that it has specific times when you can play it. So instead of, you know, you all play online together, so you have 60,000 people in one of these, you know, matches. It basically takes around a concept of 1 versus 100, where you have one player who has to defeat 100 other people in what's called the mob. And as they get questions wrong, the mob gets knocked out. And unlike other quiz games on consoles in the past, you actually win real prizes with this, which is interesting. So if you're the one and you manage to knock out everyone in the mob, you can win a prize. And mostly this consists of Xbox Live Arcade games and Microsoft points, but you can also win like laptops and things like that if you're actually quite good. But if you're not in the one, if you're not the one or in the mob, you can play in the crowd. Where, so basically, you know, if you've got 50,000 people playing, which is a fairly typical number lately, not everyone is obviously going to be in, either going to be the one or in the mob. So they play in the crowd, and they can still play along, get the points and all that sort of stuff, get their score. and compete in it. It basically puts you in like a party, so you've got four people in your group and you can just see how you're doing compared to everyone else, and it's quite good actually.
Does that mean that if you're in the crowd, because when I was playing it, I was just sat in a purple chair, so I don't think I was in the mob, but it was still ranking purple, up my point.
Yeah, the purple is in the crowd.
Right. So that means if you're in the crowd, can you still win Microsoft points?
No, you actually do have to be... Basically, if you get... Well, it says... Obviously, we don't know if this actually works in practice. It says the better people out of the crowd get selected to be in the mob. So if you notice that it says your score at the top. And if you can get that higher and higher, mm-hmm. in theory, from what we've read, it should make you more likely to be chosen to be in the mob or be the one.
So it's a bit like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where it's the people who have to watch the questions, the good ones get picked to be that one person, as it were. So you've got your mob, you've got your one, but obviously they can reselect the people for the mob compared to how people are doing in the crowd to get good people for the for people competing in the questions.
Yeah, but saying that, although we expect that how it works, in actual fact, it seems that most people in the mob and the one are complete retards. I mean, they're just dumb. So at the moment, I think it might even be completely random. I really don't know, because some of the people on there are just so dumb. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you can play every night, although the actual prize night is Friday and Saturday. And you just need to go to the spotlight area on the Xbox and you can join one of the games in progress or, you know, wait in the lobby for the game to start. And they basically start at like 7:30. The live games on Friday and Saturday, and they last for 2 hours. So you get quite a lot of rounds in, but it might just be potluck whether you're chosen or not at this point.
I do like the fact that they built in the fact of having a reminder system, so you can actually go, I want to play that one and that one, and I want to play the unofficial ones, and I'll practice on that one.
Yeah.
And there's no real software to be had, and then once it comes up and there's a thing going in, you actually use your avatar that you've got and you go into this assembly area where it's like you're going into the studio and there's lots of questions to be asked and how do I do this and this is what the game is about, and it's not like they just throw you in there. There's plenty of stuff to read to work out what's going on, and then you can go in there. And I like the fact you have a nice little AI drop down system that tells you your points, and you can quit and come out or look at your information and what you're doing and stuff. So I must admit, I'm quite impressed for it, for the simplicity of the game. I imagine there's no simplicity behind the concept of how to program this to work on an Xbox system, but the concept is so simple for it to be, for people to know, go, I can't be arsed with that, it's too hard. Well, there's nothing to download. It's literally you go on, reminder, it comes up, you play. For the person who's actually having a go, I think it's incredibly intuitive and simple to use.
It is, although it's quite buggy at this stage. I mean, you do sometimes try and join a game and you just get a random error come up saying disconnected, and then you have to rejoin. So there's annoying things like that. But I mean, once it's final, it should be a lot more streamlined. And it works really well with playing with your friends as well, because if you're on a local console, multiple people can play on a local console, and if you've got some friends who are on Xbox Live as well, you can invite them into the party so you can see how they're doing and that sort of stuff.
So going on to the playing on a local console, does that mean that, say for sake, like Sarah has a profile on my Xbox, so we both could bring our profiles up with two Xbox controllers and we both could go in and plays ourselves on that game.
Yeah, although at the moment you will both need to have gold accounts to do it.
Yeah. But you can have up to, obviously you can only have up to four people on an Xbox with gold accounts logged in at the same time, because it's one person per controller.
Yeah.
So that means people could use the one Xbox to play one versus one, which is quite cool for a whole family unit to play this whole question and answer game. Is quite cool. I unfortunately need to have another go at it, because the entire time I played it on mute.
Because, oh dear.
yeah, Sarah and Lottie were doing something else. So I was playing it in the background, so I didn't get the full experience. I want to have another go at it. But what I was doing, it was quite good. Obviously, there was information being relayed verbally, but the questions came up, and they were fun questions to answer. And I got I got two of them right that I didn't know the answers to. I guessed. It was an educated guess, but I guessed. But the rest of them, I knew what they were. There were some quite good ones that were comic-related and some other ones. And I was like, well, this is quite nice that they're actually genres that are interesting to people who have an Xbox instead of... It didn't feel like playing Trivial Pursuit, where it's kind of like, well, I don't know that. Why would I want to know that?
Dude, that's a bad point with the game, which we're now going to get to. It doesn't have enough science, history, geography, or any other questions in those sort of categories. It's all weird stuff like sports and film.
Well, that's the thing.
What I didn't know about that sort of stuff. Why would I need to know about that sort of stuff?
I think what would be really nice, if this really takes off successfully, that they have maybe multiple genred games running. So, you know, there's games that would be running that might have science, politics, stuff that your dad might want to watch. Because he'll have a go and go, well, this is really good, son, but I don't know any of the answers to this. I don't know who...
Oh, my dad's been playing it constantly. I had to create him an Xbox Live account so he could play the game.
He likes it, does he?
Yeah, last night when we were playing it here, every 2 minutes he was sending us an invite to try and play it with us. It was ridiculous. So yeah, he really likes it. He even learned what an Xbox Live account is in order to play it.
Wow. So he's got a gold account just to play this game.
Yeah.
Well, that's impressive for the game. It shows that it's dragged your dad into the game because of the fact that you're playing this question and answer game that is probably being updated.
Before, he just had a local account. And it was like, if I'm moving to Aldershot, you're going to need a proper account because you won't be able to play on mine anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Because if he wants to play online with any of the games, he's got to...
Well, he won't. He'll just use it for 1 versus 100.
Yeah. But, no, I quite like the idea of it. I think it's a great concept of being able to use the Xbox system. And I imagine it was going to be quite fun to play when you've got the... I can't remember what the project's called. The one that you like.
Natal.
With your hand. Natal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really showing how, if you look at what an Xbox Mark One software came with and what they are capable of doing up to today's standard, then you've got Project Natal in the background running, then you've got 1 versus 1 already out, and then all of the features that we've seen shown at E3 that are going to be added to the system. To be honest, do you remember that video that we saw when just before the Xbox came out with the guy who's got shaven head and he had the suit with the trainers on and he was talking about the Xbox and how well it was and it had that CG ant at the beginning? Do you remember that video?
Yeah, Jay Allard.
Yeah, that's the one. And he was going on about how it's going to be intuitive, you'll make it what you want to make it, and people will have an Xbox not because they play video games but for other reasons as well. The Xbox is finally just getting close to that benchmark that they set themselves, which I don't think they ever succeeded. But it has got to the point now where people probably won't own an Xbox if they're not a gamer, but their boyfriend will have it, or their brother's got it, or it's something their dad's got, and other people in that family unit will start using it for other things. Someone might use it to check their Facebook or their Twitter just for playing this 1 versus 1, or simpler things other than having to play video games on it, the fact that they'll be renting movies of it or things like that. So it's nice to see how the Xbox has changed without having to release a new one just for one feature. So,
well, that's the advantage of having software being such a central focus point instead of hardware, which has been in the past with consoles.
Yeah. Make everything wireless, shove a couple of USB ports, and you're away. And yeah. I think we've hit that rough boundary with graphics, that we're not trying to... We've stopped hitting the leaps and bounds, and it's more about the tweaks and the polishes now, which can be done by the computer game companies and not by the developers of the hardware, that, you know, that we're not going to need a new Xbox for quite some time yet. It, you know, it would be nice, but I don't think we need it as much. Games look pretty good as it is. Now I'm waiting for intuitive things with the games and gameplay, less about the graphics. I don't want them to skimp on the graphics, but I'm not exactly expecting the next gen graphics anytime soon. I'm not expecting major realism. There's nothing wrong with them as they are at the moment. So, but yeah, I think
give it time to change your tune.
Oh yeah, someone will release a game that's out. This is the video of what it will look like on the Xbox 362 or whatever it's called, and I'll be like, oh my god, I need it. I need it now. I need it now, and lots of it. But yeah, I'm quite impressed with this one versus this one, especially the fact that it's used the avatar system.
Yeah,
which is quite cool. It's a good way of introducing it, probably a lot more than how the Wii has used it as well. The Wii uses a lot of games using it, but not as much. The own game system, I think the only thing that I actually used my Mii for was the one where you were answering all the questions, and it was like a poll of who was doing what. You know, do you like pizza or do you like pasta? Do you like mornings or do you like evenings? You know, it was that sort of thing, and you added your thing to it, and it said whether or not you think the majority of for people were going to pick this, or the majority of people were going to pick that.
The Wii polls.
I lost the chat pretty quickly, but I must admit, I'm quite impressed with how Xbox are dealing with this avatar system. I've had to change my avatar. He's in a pair of board shorts and a surfing top now.
Great.
He was in a biker jacket, but
not more.
Yeah.
Alright.
Yes.
Well, that pretty much wraps up this show, doesn't it?
Yep, we're going to have to... we're slowly going to get used to this. You'll just have to bear with us for the first couple of shows, because we've got no body contact. And it doesn't help the fact that Paul can see me and I can't see him, because
yeah,
the other impact is webcam.
The camera's got like a 10-second delay anyway, so it's even worse for me, because I think you're like still talking when you're not.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, bad lag. Never mind.
Well, anyway, feedback can go to feedback at gamercast.net. You can also post on the blog at gamercast.net as well. And you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/gamercast. All right, everyone, we'll catch you next week.
Yep.
For 165.
We shall catch you on the flip side. See you guys later.